You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
What's up, everybody? This is Spice Adams, and you're listening to the NFL Players Second Acts podcast. Yeah, baby!
Welcome back. Thank you for tuning in to the NFL Players Second Acts podcast. It's been a minute, but we back. I'm Peanut, and I got my uncle with me as always, Mr. Roman Harper. What's up?
What's happening?
You good?
I was not ready for the drum roll or whatever you call that at the beginning.
That's not the normal introduction, right? That's not how it actually works.
I will not say your name because I don't want to give away who our guest is, but just know that it's a different opening every single time we come on here. So I never know what's going to happen. What comes out of this guy's mouth, I don't know as well. All right, before we get all that, I want to thank all of our listeners for always tuning in. Could you give us a 5-star rating wherever you listen to your podcast, whether it's Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio? Please give us a listen, a follow, subscribe. Let's continue to push it on forward. Peanut, who is our guest today?
Today we got an oldie but a goodie. This gentleman played 7 years for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He was drafted in the second round by Lovie Smith, one of my former coaches. He's a Super Bowl winning champion. He's an all-pro guard. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Ali Marpet. What's going on, boss?
I appreciate you. Thank you.
Hold on. All right, now, before you even go into it, Ali, we got to address the elephant in the room. All right, you were a second-round pick.
Yeah.
By Tampa Bay Bucks from a Division III school.
Yeah, yeah.
That means you must have been
William Smith, Mary, and Hardy Baylor. I can't even pronounce it. They got like 8 names.
You got like 3 different D3 programs right there wrapped into one. So D3 player. So I'm hyping myself up here. I like to do it.
You should.
Introduction. I'm proud of it now. So I was the highest.
I played with D2 guys, never D3.
Yeah, I was the highest drafted Division III player in NFL history. So
You got to own that.
I'm a small school guy. So I read though that you were the offensive player of the year. As a lineman?
I've never
heard of that.
Other things I feel proud of. Yeah, so I was co-offense. I don't know if that counts.
How does that work?
With another quarterback. But yeah, so I was a co-offensive player of the conference.
Did you have any touchdowns?
No touchdowns or anything like that. So no real stats. But I'm telling you, I was better, to put it politely, I was better than my competition pretty significantly.
Okay.
Enough to garner that honor. But yeah, so I was like, oh, this is what football is. Like, you just like dominate, dude. And then when you get to the NFL, it's like, oh no, this is a little bit different.
Yeah.
These guys are getting paid too.
How much do you think you would have dominated at a D3 school?
Nowhere near as much as that. I'm just saying, like, so I played with a guy, Jari Evans, who went to Bloomsburg University. It was a D2, right? And so I was like, how do you get drafted from a D2 school? And he went like 4th round. Yeah. You being 2nd round is like, that's like impressive. Being 1st round. If you went to D1, you're going first round. But if you went to small school, so everybody's like, they're going to question it. But second round is just like going first round from where you are. And he was like, the only way you get drafted from a small school is literally you have to destroy people. Yeah. As an offensive lineman, you're like, you're carrying them out of bounds. You're body slamming somebody every play. You're like, you just jump off the tape. You're like, I don't know. The film's kind of grainy. I don't know where they're playing at. But this kid is just dominating, kicking ass. Everybody.
I mean, that is kind of, I got a little bit hyping myself up here, but a little bit, that's how it has to play out. And then also, like, for me, like, it takes a GM, like, or a coach, yeah. to, like, to take their shot. Like,
yeah,
that's who's going to take the shot on the, it's so much easier to pick the Alabama or the yeah, the SEC or whatever. You know what I'm saying? So, like, it does take it, like, to kind of put it out on the line and be like, I trust my my ability to evaluate talent, which is like a really hard thing to do for those smaller school guys.
It is.
So how was it when you went to the Senior Bowl?
Yeah, so that was kind of my...
Was that like an eye-opening experience? Like, damn, okay, I'm not really destroying people or...
Well, so I did okay at the Senior Bowl too, okay. And that was like a surprise for me. So like my first rep, one-on-ones, like that's the big thing.
For that me. Is, oh, yeah, yeah. On so, Wednesday.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So like they say the game doesn't really matter, it's just really one-on-ones it's practice true. That matters. Anyway, so my I'm like I'm getting all fired up. It's exciting for me. My first rep, I'm at left tackle against Nate Orchard, who was the D1 sack leader that year at Utah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And so I'm like, well, I'm about to get found out. Like they're gonna about to realize that I don't belong here. Like what am I doing against a sack leader? First rep, and I ended up winning it. And I was like, all right, maybe I do belong. And then slowly throughout the course of the week, I was like, oh wait, I can actually do this, and I can do it at a high level. So there's a couple moments where I was like kind of surprising myself.
Yeah.
Along
yeah.
the way, does that make sense?
Yes,
yeah,
for
you
sure.
got that real competition. I can play here.
And I realized that I shouldn't be playing left tackle. I think
right.
That was another thing.
I was gonna say like so you play tackle in college and then you transition to guard because
even at the Senior Bowl I was playing next to Trent Brown who's a tackle now. Dude's 6'8
Trent's huge, and had a terrible pro day combine
exactly
great player
but I was playing left tackle and I'm 6'4 right, 307 or whatever. They got this left guard next to me who's 6'7 whatever he is, 370 or something. Like maybe we should switch those guys. Play left guard tackle, you play left guard. So that was a switch room.
So you were at your heaviest weight, you were 307. What was that process like to go through and eat the calories? I mean, you weren't naturally big. I think I read somewhere where you were like 280, 290, 300, and you just kept putting those calories on and on. Like,
Was that hard? Yeah, you can see where I'm at right now. I mean, I've lost, so I'm down 75 pounds or whatever like that. So I'm at my weight where I feel like I should be sitting at. But yes, it was hard. Like when people tell me they can't gain weight, like young athletes, when I talk to them, like, I can't, like, you know, I'm trying to put on weight, like I can't gain weight. I'm like, eat with me for a day. Like I guarantee you, you're going to gain weight. Like I had my alarm set to eat food. Like I'm sure you've heard the story. You know the guys in the locker room that like need to like it's the job is to eat, right? Mm. And that was my mentality around food. And so now what I've done since I've stopped playing. Is that I still had that mentality around food. I just had to sort of, like, the awareness around food has now changed. I just flipped that switch, if that makes sense. Like, I still have that same awareness around food. I just now need to change what that goal is for me. Does that make sense?
So do you eat less or do you eat differently?
I just eat less. I last night I went to, I don't know if you guys have been here, but you're Chicago based?
I'm a Chicago guy, yeah.
So Ocheval, there's an Ocheval burger place here in New York.
Are you serious?
So there last night. I'm still eating good. Yeah. I just got to eat less.
With the egg on top? With the bacon?
Dude, fantastic. Yeah. They're one of the best burgers, I'm telling you.
We got to go to Ocheval and get you a burger.
I have no idea what
you're going to love it. Oh, my God.
Okay. It's one of the best burgers in Chicago.
All right, shout out to Ocheval. Shout out to Ocheval, too.
Love that burger spot.
Yeah. So, yeah, I just have to eat less of it. But, again, the intentionality around food is not something I can just, like, you know, forget. So that's ingrained in me from all those years of gaining to be, you know, lineman. So.
You look like a tight end right now.
I agree.
That's the first thing you said. It's like, damn, you look like a tight end.
Looks just like a tight end.
Yeah.
I don't know if I got the hands for it.
So you were co-MVP in college. You can do it.
We're hyping you up now. You should come back as a tight end. You can go to tight end university to be with Greg Olsen and them.
Yeah, maybe.
Do some stuff.
No, so actually one of my workouts in my senior year, I was with the Bills, and the OC, tight ends coach, and O-line coach came to Hobart. So it was, I don't know, a two-hour drive or whatever. So they all came out to the school, and I did 5 minutes of O-line position work, and then I did 30 minutes of tight end stuff. I was like, about to play tight end. Like, this is gonna be about to be cool. Like, I'm gonna have a whole different experience around football. Like, I'm gonna get my name called and stuff like that, and score touchdowns. But that didn't end up happening.
What I want to ask is, when I retired, I built a boat. I built a rowboat, and I rowed across Lake Michigan.
It's fantastic. It
took me 26 hours nonstop straight. We built a boat. My buddy of mine, Jake, we built a rowboat from scratch, and that was kind of a. You know what? I still got it in my tank to do something competitive or anything like that. So you retired after seven seasons. You retired fairly young.
Yeah.
And you lost 75 pounds.
Right.
And you climbed Mount
Kilimanjaro.
Yeah, I hope I said that right.
You did it. Yeah, you got it.
Do you think you could have climbed that mountain at your playing weight?
It's a good question. I would like to think that I could have,
but
so I was inspired by a teammate of mine. So Bo Allen, he was three, he was a D tackle. He did it at 320 probably the time. So I'd like to think that if he did it, I could do it.
Yeah.
And then also the same trip, Haloti Ngata
announced
his retirement up there.
I remember and, that. Yeah. Okay.
So
I didn't know you were on that trip. Okay.
No, so I did it a couple years later.
Oh, a couple years. Okay. Yeah. Sorry.
Oh, that was them two who did it.
Yeah. But, I heard stories about they need a little assistance. Not Bo,
for sure,
but
yeah.
Hopefully you're 330. You know, sometimes you need a little help carrying some. So I like to think that I could do it. I could get it done.
Is it a walk or is it like a legit climb?
No. One of the reasons it's so popular is because it's not like a technical climb. Like, it's just like you're on your feet for hours. So you guys, anyone can like get it done.
Yeah.
It's just kind of a grind.
how long did it take you?
So it's 6 days in and out, but it's like 5 days in, and like the summit night, that's the hardest. The rest of the time you're just walking. It's
define
casual.
Summit night, what is that?
So at like midnight, you start your climb.
Okay.
And you're hiking pitch black with your headlamps. At like, you know, 17,000 feet or something like that, and just 1 foot at a time, incredibly slowly, just like inching away up until you get to at sunrise at 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock in the morning, and that's when you reach the summit. That's kind of what you do. It's a freaking grind. It was one of the hardest things I had to do. Like that
really?
Part, the getting up there to this that peak summit night, totally manageable.
Air super thin, hard to breathe.
Dude, like I was. Struggling
really okay
so what was it. The training before you get there, like, did you train at all or you just showed up? You seem like a guy, Ali, that likes to prepare.
I am
you well, come off as that guy.
Appreciate it.
And so I'm friends with a guy that does a lot of these mountain climbs now. He's really gotten into it. He has his own oxygen machine.
We should do it.
He's like high deprivation. He watches TV for an hour every day and just at low oxygen levels, just to like prepare and do all these things, the shoes, the gear. What all did you have? What did you not have? What would you suggest anybody else do to do this again?
So I like to prepare. However, this trip kind of came last minute.
Okay.
So like 3 weeks before the trip, they're like, hey, someone dropped out. You want to come? I was like, bet. Like,
yeah.
So what I ended up doing was buying all the gear and like walking around Central Park. Because, like, that's like, what else are you going to do to train besides being on your feet? Like, that's what they recommend. So, I had 3 weeks where I'm just walking around with my dog around Central Park trying to break in shoes that can work for it. And then when I get there, I realize you're supposed to have like medicine that helps like your brain from swelling from like altitude.
Really?
I didn't have that. So, like, I'm scrounging, like, trying to get from other people whatever leftovers they have.
Okay.
So, like, it ended up working out, but I'm taking like a quarter of the dosage that they recommend. Normally I like to prepare. This trip was like a last minute. I wouldn't recommend that part of it.
Okay.
So I recommend training for it and walking around, but the whole last minute.
I didn't know brain swell either.
I didn't either. That's something new.
I've never heard that. Did anybody know that?
No.
The brain swell as
not
you get the
you're
high.
Not supposed to,
you're not supposed to tell people that. Right, I got it.
Yeah, because everybody in this room behind the cameras is all like, nah, I ain't know that.
Your body isn't supposed to be at that elevation. Like, it's just, your body's just not, your organs aren't functioning properly.
I was going to say, let's climb a mountain, but you say my brain is swelling, so I'm good. We're not going to do that.
Nope. It's cold. I'm straight.
Yeah.
Like, I have adventures in my life, and I'm just like, nah, I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm straight. But so, I'm glad you did that.
It's fun. It's cool.
It was really good.
It's not for everybody, but that's cool too. But it was with, honestly, I just want to plug it. It was with a great organization. So it was with Chris Long's foundation, Waterboys.
Yeah. So I was supposed to do it 1 year and I couldn't.
Well, it's not too late.
I got tapped out.
It's not too late.
Hey, if you're listening, holler at me. Waterboys, I'm down. Let's go.
All right. Make it happen. They're finalizing the list for next year.
Finalizing the list for next year is dope. So one of the reasons you got out, since we're talking about brain swelling and everything, you played 7 years. I mean, you had just won a Super Bowl, All Pro, like finna come into like a large sum of cash. Mm-hmm. And for you, you said, "Nah, I think I'm good.
Yeah,
I'm done." You just walked away.
Yeah.
Why was that? How hard was it, that decision, for you to get to?
I mean, I think for most players and for myself, it's the hardest decision I've ever had to make. I mean, so for me, I think I've always sort of valued my health, right? There are certain things that I value in my life, and health is paramount for me. Mm-hmm, so if I'm going to live authentically within my own values, right, I couldn't continue to put my body in that, difficult place week in, week out. So like that's kind of was my framework. It was like, if I'm truly going to be honest with myself and I'm going to be like living within my health value, I can't keep playing football. For me, obviously there's money on the table, right? And that's hard to walk away from. But at a certain point, I think you have to be honest with yourself and say like, what sort of changes really is this going to make for me? I think it was really important to have I'm satisfied kind of with where I was at, like the truth is more, it can be better, but for me, it felt like I had reached a point where I could do the things that I wanted to do. I could travel, I could climb Kilimanjaro, I could do the things that I wanted to, and still having my health. And that was really important to me. Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah. 100%.
So I want to put this in perspective too, though, because it's not just a little bit of money. It was 2 years, $20 million left out there. I mean, so
significant amount of cash.
So you checked a lot of boxes. Yeah. And so at that point, because for me, did that decision, did it already start to happen like early in that year? Or was it like starting your seven, like, man, I'm just tired?
Sure.
Because before retirement, we all kind of know, or we sense something's changing in us all, right? Before we make that switch. And I'm just saying, and I'm wondering, for you, Ali, was it those thoughts already in your mind, or was it, man, I've got to the top of the mountain, I'm good.
Yeah.
Now I can let go.
So my last game was actually the Pro Bowl out in Vegas. So that was my last game, which was kind of a cool way to end it for me.
Yeah.
But yes, I think actually, I know it might sound silly, but like I think I started my football career with the end in mind a little bit.
Okay.
I think like we all know, right? It's not
forever.
Right, exactly.
I think a Pulp Fiction film.
Right. So,
starting at the end.
So I think for me, also coming from the D3 school, right? So like anything was just like, it felt like I was playing with house money.
Yeah.
Right? So like I didn't think that I was gonna have the career that I did. Mm. So I kind of always identified and expected that my career was gonna be shorter. So I kind of always had that framework of what life after football is going to be.
So was this like a bonus for you to make it to the league? Like, I made it to the league, all right, cool, but it wasn't really in my, I didn't see myself playing, but now that I'm here, I'll do it for a couple of years, and then, all right, now I'm gonna go do something else.
That's kind of how it felt for me. So like, I wish I was the kind of guy that like circled like, and like, I'm gonna play in the NFL when I'm 5 years old. Like that wasn't me.
Yeah, 1,000%.
I love that, I respect the heck out of that.
That was like, all day long.
Yeah, I wish I could like that's.
And I worked toward that. Like, no, this is what I want to do. Like, I have that mentality, and nope, I'm gonna get drafted. I'm gonna go here. I'm gonna like, I wrote out goals, and I had a chalkboard that I legit wrote my goals.
Right.
Like, I'm gonna run this. I'm gonna go to this pro day. I'm gonna do this, and that, it played out every way I scripted my life, and it played out exactly the way I wanted. And I think for me, it was harder to walk away from the game because I had wanted it for so long and so bad.
Yeah.
So I respect the fact that you could say, yeah, I'm good. Whereas me, I didn't have that luxury. I didn't have that opportunity to be like, yeah, I can walk away.
So first of all, you seem like a a disaster prepper, right? Like I'm preparing for the worst all the time, because when I get here, I'm like, dude, at any time I could be gone.
Sure.
Which it actually turned out to be a benefit for you.
Yeah.
And so, as you make, because I still want to know, like, when did you decide?
Yeah.
Was it after Super Bowl? Was it at Pro Bowl? Was it during this? I want to know when you decided, like, you know what, this is probably going to be it.
Yep.
Because I'm sure they didn't know that until.
No.
Yeah.
I definitely don't think I was ever going to be the guy that played 10, 12 years that wasn't going to be. After my first training camp, I realized that. So like in college, I'm like.
It was hard. Training camp was hard.
It's real. Like, I'm not going to be like, oh, I'm doing this 10 more times, 12 more times.
At the easy training camp. I'm 0-3 training camp.
They didn't have 2-a-days.
I'm 0-3, and I was like, this stuff is hard. Like, I don't know I'm a guy that can run all night. I was like, yo, I don't know if I could do this.
I called my dad and was like, dad, this is like, I don't know, this is what I want to do. And he was like, Roman, I want you to look at that check that you got. All right. And you've been working for this your whole life.
Yeah.
This is like what you wanted.
Shout out
and
to
just
Pops.
See what you really want to do. And I was like, you're right. I'm going to get back out there.
Do they make linemen go like, what were your reps like? Do you do all the reps with like scout team, first team, second team, third team? Do you have to do it like special teams?
There's no special teams where you do injury or something like that. There's no tapping anyone else in. Like, that's the thing about playing line. Like, you're getting all the reps.
Yeah.
Especially as a young guy. And also, that was always my mentality too. Even like as whatever year 6 or 7, where maybe I could have cut back on some. Like, I was always the guy that was going to try and get everything that I could.
Yeah.
And I think that may have possibly contributed to the fact that I sort of burnt out a little bit from doing it. But that was always my mentality. But as far as your question, as far as like, when did I know? Like, when was that moment? The truth is, I don't know if there was really like a definitive moment. I mean, I will say, like, my rookie year, I knew that, like, if I had saved up X, right? Another indicator for me is like, I saw some older guys, like, if I'm taking, you know, like a Celebrex or like a anti-inflammatory, like every day,
just to get through,
that's an indicator that I should probably not be doing this. So that was another indicator for me. So there's a lot of things that like kind of contributed to it.
Mm-hmm.
But so I wouldn't say there's
like
one.
I was just so addicted to the game, like I just loved it. But then again, but you're a lineman, so you guys are every play.
It's different.
I was not like that corner safety. Like I just ran more.
Right.
Like, I wasn't a banger like you guys.
If it was running, like I think that it would be different. But again, there's no like getting away from
That's
part of it.
I've heard a lot of linemen talk about that.
Like, so tell me this part.
Yeah.
How did your family take this? Your friends, family? Did you get all positives when you're like, you know what? This is like, it's time. Because it's
what
not just
say.
You. Yeah, because when you retire, we all retire.
Right.
Like everybody's life changes. Because everybody celebrates when you win. We all kind of are down when you lose.
Right.
You are the heartbeat of a whole family when you go to the NFL. I don't think everybody understands that.
Right. Yeah.
So how was their reactions? How did that play on your heart as well? Yeah.
So to your point, my mom and I always kind of joked, like, I was obviously a big dude, so big that I would have like gravitational pull. Like, that's what football does, right?
Yeah.
Brings everybody in.
It does.
And so my family would always congregate after games. So you're right. There's not just you, it's everybody, right?
Everybody.
That's part of it. So I think even for like other people in my family, like just navigating what the fall looks like this past fall, we're like, all right, what do we do without football? Like, so it wasn't just me, but you're right. But everybody was incredibly supportive. I think that was
that's
helpful.
Really
so mom was like, whatever you want to do, like, we totally
that's awesome.
Unconditional. So like
that's
that,
awesome.
I had a support system around me that like got it, and that helped with the decision. So
you being so young, like,
what are you, 29?
I'm 30.
30?
So,
okay.
Yeah, you just turned the big 3-0.
Yeah, right.
April,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. You guys do your research.
Come on, man.
Look at you.
It's called research.
It's called preparation. It's like watching game film.
A little bit of stalking.
We got good coaches, too.
Yeah, I'm sure.
We got good coaches, too.
A good team. Damn good team. But what'd you do? Like, 30 is a big one. You know, 30, 40, 50, you got to do something big. Like, what'd you do for the big 3-0?
I'm low-key. So, like, I love food. I love, you know, people around me. So, I had people at the house, got a sushi chef, pretty much like all you can eat sushi, and just hung out there.
What's your favorite roll, sushi roll?
Oh, interesting. I don't think I've ever been asked that question. Just I'd go tuna, salmon, avocado, something like that.
Yeah.
Something simple. Okay. That would be my go-to. Yeah. All
right.
Yeah. But I'm big, huge food guy. So you can tell, Cheval, sushi, that's me.
Yeah. So what is your favorite type of food then? Out of, you know.
That's just, I'm going Japanese, sushi.
Japanese.
That's what I'm
saying.
Big three.
Have you ever been to Japan?
No, I need to. So I have done a fair amount of traveling. So
yeah,
like, since I retired,
that we were going. That's on the list. Go ahead, the list. Throw it out there.
We're doing the show, so let's talk travel.
Let's talk travel.
So actually, my fiance and I, when we first sat down on our first date, we were like, the three places you want to go, right? So we both had Hawaii, Greece, and Italy, right? Those are
good places.
We've been there together.
You guys been there?
Yeah.
Wait, which one? All three?
All three.
all three together?
No, not all.
We didn't go to Hawaii together. We've been to Greece
together.
Italy.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, so.
We did not hold hands.
We definitely did not hold hands.
That's a romantic trip, man.
Did not hold hands with this guy.
No.
Can't hold hands with your pastor over here.
those are the first three trips that we took when I retired. It's like, all right, I had bucket list types of trips. So we did those three. Since then, we did Thailand. I did India with my dad.
Uh-huh,
did Kilimanjaro, right. We talked about. Yeah. London and Paris. We're going to Spain next month. So like all those types of things. Yeah. Like the things that I felt like I couldn't do when I played, right? When I played, I felt like I had to train nonstop.
Yeah.
Like, the gyms in Europe, like that's not cutting it.
Right.
They don't fit you.
They don't fit me. The free weights go up to 45 pounds. I'm not training over there. So I put all that stuff off, and now I'm able to do that, which is a blast.
I love traveling. I think you learn so much more seeing other cultures, other people,
definitely
how they live life and things like that. I'm not naturally somebody that loves to travel, but being married to one, it opens it up. And
we
then
forced
also
them to go.
Yeah, they did
To go to Italy and Greece. That was really hard for you.
They actually.
We went to Athens. We met you in Athens.
Yep, met in Athens.
We met in Athens, then got on a boat and went to. We were in Greece, Athens, and Italy. Or no, Greece,
Croatia,
and Italy.
It was great. I do want to go to Japan, though. I think Japan's got to be that's one of my bucket list places. And the reason why I want to go to Japan so much, number one, is how techie and advanced it is.
Sure.
Yeah.
But it's also the mindset that the Japanese people have.
I respect their culture.
I respect their culture. And just like it's one of the few nations that have never been colonized.
Right.
Like they've always had to depend on themselves. To always make it.
Right.
That's like their thing is that. So they
look
always
at
want
you.
To be
look at the big brain on Roman.
It's very forward thinking. They all, hey, look, you know me, guys. So this is like, for me, I just want to be around that because I want to see it.
I watched The Last Samurai coming here too with Tom Cruise, and they were talking about the whole Japanese custom and samurai and this, and so yeah, it really made me want to go check out Japan a little bit.
All right,
so
we'll do a trip. Take the show on the road and let's go to Japan.
Thomas, Melissa, let's go.
We can
definitely do this. Get the show in Japan.
Perfect.
We can definitely do this.
And we'll be right back.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day. And smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
All right, so now let's talk about some traveling. We'll get back to that as well.
Yeah.
But this new journey you're on, education.
Yeah.
You talked about why you're here.
Yeah.
You're staying in the New York area.
Yeah.
This last year and a half.
Yeah.
Learning. Now you were an economics major in college, mm-hmm. but now you're trying to be a psychologist.
That's right.
Like I understand the body, the health, the whole total wellness thing.
Yeah.
This is your package.
Right.
Ali, please let the people know. Share with us why you're on this journey.
Yeah, I think a big part, like when I said I started with the end in mind, for me, I always, I talk about the values, right? So health being a value, another value of mine, like being of service to others, which I think you guys can both relate to, right? So for me, I was trying to navigate ways in which I can be of service to my community, right? In a way that felt satisfying and interesting to me.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I landed on psychology. Because like, I think we, as players, there's so much that pours into the mental side of the game, right?
For sure.
So I was always interested in that, right? That was my, that's my interest, those are my passions. And I'm sort of merging that with the value of being of service to others, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
So that's kind of the mission that I'm on right now, and it's a long process, right? So in the fall, I'll be starting a doctorate in psychology, so it's a five-year degree, right? So like I've got, this is a long time horizon here, but again, I'm learning about things that I'm interested in, and at the end of it, I hope to be able to help people in some capacity, which is, I think, something that fuels really important to me. So I think so that's kind of where, if that makes sense.
Do you know what you would want to specialize in more, or as you continue to learn, like you're using this as a runway to now figure that out? You just know this is the pathway to it.
So I don't, the truth is I don't know specifically what population I want to work with. But I will say the full spectrum of mental health is incredibly interesting to me. So I think that there are people like you're probably familiar with like sports psychologists, right? That sort of work on the visualization techniques and how to improve performance. And there's also with people that work with, you know, higher needs populations. And I think all of that is interesting to me. And so as I continue my education, I'm going to try and dip my toe in a couple different areas and see what really resonates. So I don't really know. I do know the full spectrum of mental health, though, performance and higher needs seem at least intellectually stimulating.
So like I'm very stimulated by this too, because I've gotten into a lot more tennis, Peanut. I know you don't know that, but I've gotten into
a
lot more tennis.
That was a whole conversation about tennis before you got here.
Breakpoint, was that?
Yes, okay. That got me into it. And I just didn't realize how many of these great tennis players, like they are the world's best.
Yeah.
And mentally, they're all, like they got cracks all in this, cracks everywhere, because they lose way more than they win overall. A lot of times, like you're losing matches, and when you lose one match, you're out of the tournament, you're done. But so every tournament that you don't win, you're trying to figure out why. And these players are the best of the best, and they always have somebody right there on their side the whole time, like telling them, hey, you're great. Hey, you're good.
That's what
and
your
like,
agent's for.
Yeah, but
this is like, do you have that when you play golf?
No, I don't.
Well, now you got to watch Full Swing, because that's the other.
I like Full Swing too.
Right. I tell you good all the time. I'll be calling you to get golf.
Right. So how do you think you guys would do in an individual sport? Like you're the guy, tennis, whatever the sport is.
I
like
think this is your, a total. That's a great question.
How would you guys do?
A great question.
I am going. Thomas, can I curse? I can't curse. I'm crush it.
I love that mentality. That's
just, yeah. I'm going to suck at first, right? I'm going to be terrible at first, but the way I think and how I train, I'm going to obsess over it, and I'm going to work until I get whatever it is that I'm trying to fix or get better on. If you want to call it the Mamba mentality.
Sure.
Yeah, that's what I would do. I'm actually currently, I'm trying, we need to play pickleball, because I am going to crush it at pickleball.
You haven't played, but you just know you're going to crush it.
I played pickleball, and it's so slow. It's
the sport that you don't have to be an athlete.
I would crush it. But that's how I think. Like, I think as a guy, men, like, we size each other up. Like, one of the first things you said, oh, okay, you look like a tight end. Now, he's sizing you up in a positive way. But naturally, that's like,
feel positive.
This is what we do, though. I can't take him. He kind of big. Or, like, we're sizing each other up. We're type A personality. So, for me, anything that I do that I try to do, I have the mindset of like, oh yeah, I'm definitely gonna kill it.
I think the big, watching those documentaries, the biggest thing was like in times of failure, right?
Yeah.
So who do you have around you?
Yeah.
Because like, and who, you have to be the one to sort of pull yourself out of it.
For sure.
So like, how did you do? Like, I'm sure you lost in some capacity.
I have a guy.
You got a guy.
I have my guy. I have a guy in my corner.
And okay.
One of the best things that he ever did was I read a book called The World's Strangest Secret by Earl Nightingale.
Okay.
And people have pondered this since the beginning of time. What is the world's strangest secret? Philosophers and everybody else, we become what we think about. And that is something that when I started playing, I read this book and I still use it with me to this day. So if I have success, I'm thinking, you know, something positive. But when I have failure, why did I fail? Okay, I was thinking about something at home. I was thinking about something else. And I thought that negative into existence. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I reaped what I sowed. And what I've really focused on now that I read that book 15, 20 years ago, when something negative creeps in my mind, I try to replace it with a positive thought. Because if I'm thinking negative all the time, negative tends to happen. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
So that was something that I learned early. So that's why when you ask me that question, I was like, oh, I'm going to kill it. I'm going to crush it.
Yeah.
Like that's just how my brain works. I try to take out that negative and then just 1,000% focus on the positive.
Sure.
You know, we'll talk offline, but I can give you the book. It's like a quick 20-minute read. And Rome knows this. Like, I'm a guy of quotes.
I read
a lot.
He's got hundreds of quotes.
I take quotes.
Oh, he'll give you like five right now.
We'll wait until after the show.
But I have them in my phone when I read them, and I'm like, okay, yeah. But that's how my brain, I'm attracted. I gravitate toward that, and that kind of helps me stay out of that negative, that down, the darkness and all that. So it's great. I love it.
And Ali, I'll be 100% honest. I think I would not be as successful in an individual sport because I've always been a really good teammate. That's like what I pride myself on, is that I've been a great teammate. I haven't always been the star. I've been around a lot of really great players, and I've always been able to add value to any situation I've been in. I know how to get along with anybody. Yeah. I know how to pick guys up when they're down. I know how to lead when other people are down. Shoot, I'll step out there and do it, you know?
Sure.
And so I get this thing going. So I understand. I'll be able to read the room. And so I am genuinely not a great, like, individual sport guy. But I have gotten into tennis lately, and I've really gotten into golf. And I got the golf bug bad. People that knows this, I try and golf as much as I can and whenever I can. I've gotten a lot better in a short amount of time because I'm actually focusing on it. And so I'm seeing these results. And look, man, it's tough. All of a sudden you get a bad lie, and I should probably hit an iron out of this, but I'm going to hit this 3-wood anyways, and I don't do well. And then trying to shake yourself out of that. And just like with all these individual sports, like we've seen on Point Break or Full Swings, these guys and these women – man, when one thing happens, it's really hard to shake yourself out of it when you don't have anybody else to lean on to get you out of it. It's you got to go out there and make the play every single time. And so it is tougher. It is a totally different thing. And you being a psychologist down the line, I think these things are very, very interesting. And you're going to have a unique perspective.
Yes, you will.
From all of these, from all your sports, you know, what sports has taught you and what it's given you.
All right, and I appreciate that. And I'll just say real quick, again, so not clinical advice or anything like that, but I would say from a framework of experience, right?
Mm-hmm.
To your point on sort of being in that team environment, like what former players struggle with, right? So like, what does that look like when we don't have that, when we're not leaning on each other?
Yes.
How much harder is life, right? Mm-hmm. When we don't have that locker room that we're used to.
Yeah.
So I think to your point, that's one of the many challenges that you guys know, obviously, that I'm sort of navigating too personally. It's like, all right, I'm not in the locker room. Who's my support? I mean, I have a support system, but like navigating all those things, it's tough. It's hard.
And that's a perfect segue to my next question was, you know, with young guys now more and more retiring, they're looking up, they're retiring early, they make more money at an earlier age. Mm-hmm. And the NFL is being so successful and being so great and blessed so many of us. But when younger guys are starting to want to retire, mm-hmm. what advice would you give them? You were a young guy that decided to retire in your 20s, and now you see that more and more often.
Yeah.
What would be the advice for that you would give to them, the good, maybe some of the bad and maybe some of the pitfalls that may be out there, especially like not being in the locker room anymore.
Sure. Okay. So there's a lot to unpack, and I'm thinking about a lot of different things. But I would say
well, you're still kind of going through it too, though. You're still trying to figure it out, though, right?
So I think that speaks to where I'm at right now.
Yeah.
So
that's what I was saying. Like, great question, but you're still trying to figure it out. Yeah. Like, you're navigating through it.
I'm in it.
Yeah,
I'm in it.
That's like, what I'm saying. Yeah.
So
yeah.
I would say is, and I almost would say I anticipated feeling, I'm not like diagnosing, but like depressed, the like anxious.
Sure, yeah.
Like
everyone goes through that.
I anticipated that after retirement, after talking to guys that are retired.
Yeah.
And I would say that like the lack of structure and lack of clarity, like those are things. Structure and clarity. That's where I live. That's my safe space, right? So like without those, I struggled. You know, pretty significantly. It's without that, it's tough. Like I'm still in it. I'm still navigating. You're talking about like my professional interests. Like I'm still narrowing in, right?
Yeah.
So like, even up until this point recently, before I was in, I decided to go to get my doctorate. Like there's an entire year of navigating. I was in a master's in mental health counseling program. Now I'm doing this and doing that, and it's like this period of like uncertainty that just doesn't sit well day in, day out. So it's, I would just say for anyone transitioning, there's going to be that period.
Yeah.
Like the uncertainty is going to happen, and that's totally fine. And I think that there's a piece of me, a part of me that like kind of, I don't know, wanted to like pride myself in being like, oh, I'm going to be the poster boy of like a successful transition of like, I want to be like one of the guys that knows how to do it the right way.
Yeah, because you've been preparing since you were here.
Exactly. Like in my head, like those, but then that feels like burdensome to me of like, I need to do everything right. And like, if I don't have clarity and I don't have structure, then it almost just added into that anxiety and uncertainty that I was feeling. Throughout the transitioning process. Does that make sense?
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
So
I felt this. Yeah, I was the same way. Like, I was like, all right, I know what I want to do. I want to do this and that. And then I'm doing everything and I still struggled. I was just like, man, I miss football. Like, I don't have my locker room. I got my boys.
Right.
And I still had friends. Like, we talked and we did all this stuff, but there's just a piece of you missing because you've had this unique experience, high school, college, NFL, and then. Like that, it's over. And you're just like, now, what am I going to do now? Even though you might have it planned out and you have your support system, there's still going to be some form of struggle. Like if you've done something for 20 years, 30 years, whatever, you're going to, you know, I had a buddy say you lose a little bit of your identity. You go through a small or some form of depression. I forget what the other one, but like no matter how good you have it, you will struggle, but it's just how long does that struggle last? Does it last a month, 2 months, 3 months? And then once you're in it, then you come out of it, and then you're able. It's kind of like grieving. You know, when you go to a funeral, you know, the five stages or four stages of grieving, like you have to grieve your career. Like, yeah, I mourned it. And then now you just, once you get over it, that's when it, in my opinion, it starts to kind of blossom and grow, and you start your new life. Yeah.
I didn't expect it, but there were times where I would legitimately I would cry or whatever, and like it was because of the feeling of grief. Like it was a very similar process for me. So like, yeah, that was a part of my journey. And the way that I would describe it is just sort of unsettled. So guys transitioning, just like anticipate that there's going to be some unsettled aspect. Like that's just part of finding your next thing or the next chapter is in any period of transition. It's just a little bit unsettling. And especially for me, because I love clarity. Mm. And that's what I had with the NFL.
Yeah.
So I didn't have that. And that was especially hard. And now I feel like I'm starting to get there. So that feels good again.
I think for... And this was my struggle was that I wasn't confident in myself in doing other things as well. Like I'd just been so good at football and I mean that's what I did. And you gain all this confidence because you confirm validity with all the successes that you have. You just continue to knock down doors. You know, you get the scholarship, the first scholarship, you know what I mean, to go to college. So that builds confidence. Mm-hmm. Then you get to college and you're on the bench and all of a sudden you're playing. You're like, dude, that builds confidence. And then you see yourself in a newspaper and now you get drafted. And so you just continue to stack all these things that happen for you. You're like, man, you just get more confident in who you are. That switch is turned off.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're trying to transition because, you know, that's what we all say we're going to do. We're going to be great at it.
Right.
And you don't know. And you just like
it's probably going the biggest roadblock you've ever had in your life because we've all been fairly successful, right?
Right. Yeah.
We're the top 0.01% to make it to the league.
Yeah.
Right. And then when we retire, it's like that. It's the first, I would say roadblock that's happened in our lives. Like, whoa, wait, like what happened?
And for me, when I tried to do some things, it was like, man, am I even good? Like, I don't know. Like, yeah. I know in ball because, like, you see it. You understand it. And you get promoted because of it. In other lanes, it's just not as clear.
So here's the question I'd pose. And I think it's sort of rhetorical. But, like, what does successful transition even look like? Like, if I'm crying and I'm upset, like, that can still be part of a
for
successful
sure.
transition.
Yeah. 1,000%.
Like,
yeah.
So, like, I think I don't even, like, I want to have a successful transition. But I don't even know what that looks like. At times, I didn't even know what that even meant. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, like, I think navigating what that looks like and defining what that looks like for young players, I think, retiring is an important thing to do.
I think
that
it's
is
what you
huge.
Make. Yeah, that's
so,
great.
So, I think like, that
it's
is what
you. It's, I think it's what you make it. That's what makes it successful.
Yes.
You know? Yeah, I might have to take a day and cry a little bit and grieve, and you know what?
I think
that's
we need
okay.
to say that more, though.
Yeah.
That's at least something that I've found for myself. And then to your point as well is. Earlier in your question as far as other things for young guys transitioning, and I'm still a young guy transitioning, but the strengths that we have as players, mm-hmm. right? So I know that people talk about that and your strengths, you're saying, in a locker room, like yeah. community, like build whatever your strengths were as a player, that's your identity. That's the important mm-hmm. thing to carry on. Mm-hmm. If you're the team player, if you're the guy in the locker room, if you know how to read people, like how can I take these aspects of myself, these skills that I've developed playing football, and how do I bring that to my next career? And I think that I'm assuming that you've done that in some capacity. You're doing, it's not a single man, it's not one dude doing the podcast, right? Like you work in a team, like that's what you do. I think that's so important. And that's what I found that I think that the things that I liked while playing, I'm going to try and continue in my next career. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense.
Makes total sense. So now the fun questions.
All right, bring it.
We all have had our bell rung. We've all had, like, wait, I'm in the league now. Oh, snap. Right. I remember mine, like, I'm in the NFL. You know, first time I went in the locker room, saw my uniform, and you just eyes wide open. What was that? What was your welcome to the NFL moment when you got there?
Your first, like.
Your first just, whether it was a hit, whether it was looking at your pay, like, just, like, damn. Welcome to the NFL. Like, holy snap.
So, I mean, I can say earlier, like, that moment one-on-one with at the Senior Bowl.
Yeah.
Like, for me, that was the first experience that I had. It's like, oh, I'm – like, you have to think mentality, like, a D3, like – I'm playing for the love of the game, right? There's no scholarship. Like, this is just, and I'm out here, yeah. I'm like, this guy's from Florida, Alabama, whatever. I'm like, oh, wait, like, I'm out here. Like, which, so that was my first moment. And then after I was drafted, I'd say probably my first preseason game.
Yeah.
I was similar. I can still picture it. Like, my hands were just like dripping sweat. Like, I was just like, I was like, wait, this, and it was a, first preseason, I wasn't even starting. It was like mm-hmm. a nothing game, and looking back on it, but like freaking out. And then just, I don't know, getting the flow, and mm-hmm. when you're starting to play football and then everything starts to kind of come together, like I'd say that was another moment for me. But yeah.
Nice. All right. I mean, my first preseason game, I think I played like 4 plays. I didn't even play. It was, I mean, I didn't even care. I was just happy to be out there.
Yeah.
It happens. All right. My question is, what is your best Tom Brady story, or I actually like Gronk too because he's pretty entertaining, not gonna lie. Give me one of those two. For those two to come to Tampa Bay, it probably really changed everything. I know the ticket sales went way up.
Oh, sorry. Having, like, I can define my career of what, like, football looked
like.
Like,
pre and post.
I'm telling you, like, this, prior to Tom, like, the Bucs weren't that good.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't know, even, like, going out, right, in public, going to restaurants, bar, like, nobody cared. It was just fine. Like, I prefer it that way.
Yeah.
And then
you're D3, you're used to it.
I'm used to it. Like,
it wasn't
cool.
Easy.
Yeah, exactly. And then Tom comes around, and we start getting, you know, 5 primetime games, and people start to know what's going on.
Yeah.
And I think either the community in Tampa became a little bit more of a football town, which is awesome to be a part of.
Yeah.
But that was a cool, cool experience having them.
Something about when you start winning. We're like, when we were in Charlotte, we would come home at like midnight from, you know, coming from the West Coast. And then we get home at like midnight, 1 a.m., and it was fans outside. And it was regular season. Yeah. We weren't even in the Super Bowl yet. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But it was just, it's something about when you start winning, it's gravity. It pulls you in.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's I don't know. I think it's just, that's why I love the game of football, man. It really does bring a lot of people together.
Is it bad? I'm going to have to go back and Google, like, what you look like, 75 pounds.
You had longer hair, right? I think you had longer hair,
I'm
right?
looking at you, and I'm just like, I can't even imagine you playing O-line right now. You just don't even have the look. And a lot of people that lose weight, like, they look like they just had a big old head. Well, it's all in your face.
Well, that was on my rest of my body, too. I mean, I'll get you another picture, but that's just all in the background.
Yeah, you can see his cheeks.
I had a little unimpressive beard, but so I would what I'd do is I would cut my hair like once every 2 years, let it grow out, mm-hmm. cut it again, buzz it right before the season, and then also I would let my facial hair grow out throughout the course of the season. So clean shaven in training camp, and let the beard grow out. Beard was pretty unimpressive, but my next profession, psychologist. I like to think is another profession where I can have a beard. So like two professions, football player and psychologist, got the green light to grow a beard. So yeah. I'm fired up about that.
I like that. Yeah. I like that.
And my podcast host.
But he's got, look at this. Like I'm not used to seeing the, you know, all this. And you finally just letting it go.
I haven't got a haircut in a while.
I like
my barber had his mom passed away and just like, yeah, it's just everybody's off. It's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's part of it.
Thank you. I feel like that. Oh,
yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Let it rip.
That.
So here's a Jewish question for you. Did my ancestry.com, like 2% Jewish, whatever. So
I'm part of the tribe. How about that?
Part of the tribe. So I never had a bat mitzvah. Was never offered that as a kid because I didn't know I had the 2-3% Jewish in me. And I know you passed on yours as a kid, right?
So I did not do a bar mitzvah, but you keep going. I think I like where this is going.
Are you gonna have one? Is it too late to have one?
No, it's not too late. Sorry, for either one of us. That's the exciting part, dude. You want to have a bar mitzvah? Let's do it. You'd have it would be an elite celebration.
Oh my god, like, I am so game.
I don't know if you're waiting for an invitation or for who. We'll get you connected to the rabbi. It doesn't matter.
Let's do it.
I need to do one too. So maybe we could do a joint bar mitzvah.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I'm with it. So I was at a Chicago. A lot of Jewish people, right? Know a lot of Jewish people in the community. So I'm in Houston. And I'm the best man, and I get ready to give a toast, and I grab my glass of wine, and I go L'chaim, everybody, and it did not go over well. It was just cowboys and black people, and they were like, "Is he choking on something? What the hell is?"
No,
and
I was, know your audience, you know. They're not in Texas,
but I do it. I do it in Chicago all the time, and it's amazing. And it's like because I know there's a lot of Jewish people in the audience.
Gotta
so
know your audience.
I do that, and they were like. I was like, okay, that didn't go over well. And I was like, yeah, just give the toast, dummy. And I was like, all right, yeah, best man, love you, bless you, blessings. Yeah. All right, drink up. Yeah, but yeah.
Well, you're halfway to your bar mitzvah now. So
I'm halfway. Yeah.
This is my last question, right. Is that it goes back to traveling. Because we talked about the traveling, and we both kind of opened up about it a little bit. I want your top five travel destinations, bucket list, whether you've done it before or that you want to. Okay. Hit next.
Okay, so the ones that I hit, so Italy to me is that's a must. So Florence is unbelievable. The Amalfi Coast is unbelievable. But I'll kind of put that as one. Two, Greece is unbelievable. Islands off Greece are great. So those are two places that I've done. Places that I want to go. Mm-hmm. Hit three. Portugal, I want to go. Spain, I'm going to be going. And Japan would be those would probably be my next three trips. So yeah, I can't wait.
I've been to all of those places that you've named.
That's
every single place I've been to.
You're a world traveler.
He is.
That's fantastic.
He's encouraged me to do more.
I'm trying to encourage him. True story, we went to Croatia. We're in Dubrovnik.
Yes.
We went to Dubrovnik, mm-hmm. Croatia, jumped in the Mediterranean.
I love that.
And tried to play like two big black guys trying to play water polo.
How'd that go?
Terrible because Mr. Harper over here jumped in the lake or the sea. He jumped in and he goes,
jumps down and comes up and goes, "Ain't no bottom." I can't.
a little bit different. The meds a little bit different. Yeah, right?
First of all, because it was like little kids out there. You got to understand. All right, let's draw the picture for everybody. Yeah. All right, so it's little kids out there. We're in our Speedos because that's what everybody has, and so we're all in.
Okay.
And
I'll
so
give you that
he borrowed somebody. Okay.
I did. And then so we get out there. I'm like, it's. If little kids are out here doing it, like I could do it too. It wasn't that bad. So I go in and I'm just, you know, staying up top at first. Then I'm just going to kind of relax, go down, and then come back and get my breath. And I went down and I kept going. I'm like, bro, I came back up. I'm like, nah, I ain't no bottom. This is not it. And so from there on, I was very uncomfortable out there. The rest of the time, the water
ain't
polo.
No bottom.
Yeah. The water polo experience was not good for me. Yeah, it was not great. We had a good time.
Yeah.
But overall, I mean, I just didn't realize that you just, you know, you're just out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't great.
Give it a 4 out of 10, maybe. You
know? Yeah, 4 out of 10, max.
Country was great, but that was probably his worst experience.
It was terrible.
I just remember him coming up saying, "Ain't no bottom." I was like laughing so
hard. I was a little nervous.
That's awesome.
I was a little nervous.
Oh, my God. All right. Yeah. Final question to you.
Yeah.
Mount Rushmore.
Okay.
Who would you put on your Mount Rushmore? The people that have helped you.
Okay.
Just kind of guided you along the way. They were there for you, retirement, when you played, coaches, teachers, just a group of people that have really been Team Allie your entire life thus far.
Yeah, it's a great question. I think for me, I was super fortunate that, like, I could name the people individually, but, like, my family, so I'd start with my mom and dad, like, for them.
You want to make that one or make it two?
Because there's
always
so I actually put them one and two. I put them for two different reasons. My dad, from like a work ethic standpoint, like a standard of like sort of excellence like that coming from him, and then my mom, just from like I don't know, from an emotional standpoint, like from a compassion to myself and others, and this being the service of others. Those two things that are ingrained in me. So those two, I'd say. While I was playing, my fiance right now, soon to be wife, she was a huge support to me throughout playing. It's a hard thing to do, right? Mm-hmm. It's a lot of stress, a lot of pressure. To have someone to help sort of carry that load was absolutely massive for me. And then I would probably put for number four, for my football career, he's now the head coach at Hobart. He was my offensive line coach and offensive coordinator. But Kevin DeWall, like, he was a fantastic, again, standard of excellence of, like, how to hold yourself to high standard and how to get improve on things. And, you know, that was – he was absolutely massive for me. So, and still is, so we stay in touch, obviously. So those were my four.
So are you, like, the standard at your college? Like, hey, if he can do it, you can do it. And before you, was that
make it the NFL. It's more like, if you do everything right and you can check these boxes, then they'll find a way. Like, that's the truth. So
why do you think you didn't get a D1 offer or a D2 offer? Yeah. Why do you think that is?
So I grew up in Westchester, New York, so suburbs of New York City. It's not really like football country. It's not like, so that, and then also I was super undersized. I was like 220 whatever pound offensive lineman, like, it's not playing D1. And then I also didn't have the best frame of reference. I wasn't going to like camps and things like that. I didn't have someone tell me to do X, Y, and Z. So just navigating those things. So that's why.
Cool.
But I do have one other thing that I kind of can I tie it together?
Yeah.
So talking about travel and quotes, right? Because that's you too. I want to pull it up. But so I was in London. I was doing some traveling recently in April or whatever. And we went to the Winston Churchill Museum, and we get to see, you know, the war rooms where he conducted the war, right? So, like, it's a underground bunker. It's unbelievable, but it's also a Churchill museum. And he had a quote in there that I loved, and I think that you'll want to make note of if I can find it.
Look at that.
Ready? I refuse to be exhibited like a prize bull whose chief attraction is his past prowess. So I'll say it again. I refuse to be exhibited like a prize bull whose chief attraction is his past prowess. So as that relates to former players, right? So I think a lot of times we identify and hang our hats on that. But I think as we look forward to the things that we can bring to our communities, I think That's what's going to excite us and invigorate us. And I think that that quote's awesome. You'll make a note of that one.
I will get it after we wrap up on the show.
It's not about just our football prowess.
There you go. I feel like that's apt for our setting here.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
And with that, we're done. That's a mic drop. That's like the perfect outro.
But don't drop these. These are real expensive.
I won't drop them.
I did it metaphorically.
iHeartRadio
gonna bill us on that. We can't do that. Hey, Allie, this was good.
All right, well,
this was great.
This is great for me, too.
Well, so I appreciate it, man. Yeah. Thank you. And for all of our listeners out there, continue to tune in wherever you get your podcast at. Oh, I can look into the camera. I forget we got a camera out here today. All right, wherever you get your podcast at, whether it's iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, remember to give us a click, hit review, subscribe, 5-star rating, please. We appreciate that. And like always, man, keep listening, keep looking at us. We're doing our thing. Tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend. We're out.
Peanut.
Hey, thank you. This was dope.
Yeah, I appreciate
Seriously, I'm glad we get to do them in person, and we'll exchange numbers offline, but like your transition and everything, feel free to use me as a reference or a resource, not reference, a resource, Rome. He know everything. He's probably what? He been playing. You retired.
Oh, here we go.
He retired in 2016.
Here we go.
But he started playing in the 80s.
Right.
That's why first time I met him, I thought he was like 45, but he was like, nah, man, I'm 27. I was like, ain't no way. But yeah, he just, yeah. But,
so, wealth of knowledge, you said. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
my God, so perfect. Much. You see all them grays?
We're going to end the show.
Oh, sorry.
We got to end the show.
We appreciate y'all. Thank y'all for tuning in. We out.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.